Check your posture. Making sure your back is straight. And then relax your body. Starting with the top of your head, as your awareness moves down, you can bring the relaxation with it. Each out-breath, moving deeper into the body. Feeling your seat on the cushion. Grounding. We'll do 15 minutes of shamatha. So making a firm intention at the very beginning that you're going to keep your mind on the object for the duration. Using either the object, the breath, or if you feel comfortable, the thoughts, emotion, whatever's arising. stretch your legs if you need to, forward. Return to the breath. So consider each of these points with a focused mind, slowly and carefully. That way we increase our wisdom of contemplation and meditation. There's no difference between others and myself. Hours a day, I am trying to obtain something good for myself and avoid any unpleasantness. Others are also trying to obtain happiness and avoid suffering. We are all equal in this way, exactly the same. Their happiness is no less important to them than my happiness is to me. Nor does the suffering they experience hurt any less than my suffering. However, there is a difference. Others are innumerable, and I am only one person. Just like $1 is nothing compared to $1 million, wouldn't it be fair to consider my happiness insignificant in compared to that of others? Remember, here we're decreasing that self-cherishing, selfish mind. The one that thinks of my happiness first and most. Wishing to secure my happiness first encourages a very narrow perspective that creates lots of worry and anxiety. we develop a lot of fear and anxiety about getting what we want. There's no opportunity to relax and enjoy things. Likewise, in my relationship with others, I expect them to treat me well, help me, respect me, and then when they don't, I'm disappointed and hurt. Out of all proportion. Because I consider my welfare most, I am at risk for conflict with others. It creates a barrier between myself and others and alienates me from them. I end up harming others to pursue my own happiness, and then I feel guilty. Remember, these attitudes are not me. They're simply attitudes that can be changed. The attitude of being more concerned with the happiness of others reverses this egotistic attitude. that clings to my own happiness with all its shortcomings. Not only does cherishing others make them feel good, it makes me feel good. By caring about others, the focus is taken away from me, and my mind widens its perspective. My problems appear less important, and they don't bother me so much. When I cherish others, I feel close to them. Communication becomes easier, and others feel drawn to me. we can take these positive feelings of cherishing others and use them to develop courage and inner strength to continue to be of benefit. Our lives become meaningful and worthwhile. So we have a minute or two. I wanted to give a chance for people to ask questions because I had one question. Yeah.
Is there a chance to get copies of maybe the last couple of books?
I'd be happy to make you copies. They're kind of a mess. and they don't necessarily say everything that's in them.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you recording?
I am recording.
So maybe we get the recording.
Yeah.
Maybe that might be good.
If you have a USB,
can you open it up on the website?
I don't think that can take a lot more effort than we have resources for. So it's easier if we have USB keys. We may have some in the store for sale too. And of course you can mail them to me. That's the easiest. Yeah.
Question.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you have any practical tips for when we're following or observing our thoughts. I tend to sort of find out that I have thoughts partway through, and then I can sort of watch the tail end, but I don't catch the beginning. Is there any way to help focus that? Or should I?
I think what you do after the tail end of a previous one is gonna where your mind goes when one thought ends and before the next one begins.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to lose focus then, and so I think if you stay with it until it's gone and then stay with it in the space between, then you'll probably catch the beginning more likely. Because like with the breath, when we at the pause between, we do the inhale and then we do the exhale.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the exhale, the mind thinks it's done. Like it doesn't have to do anymore. You don't have to pay attention anymore because it paid attention to this whole breath. And so it starts to wander or get dull. So if you can, stay with it as the last one is ending. speak about the difference between the intention and the dedication? The intention at the beginning of the meditation and the dedication at the end.
They have to do with karma, the parts of karma. That your motivation is one part of karma at the beginning, your intention for the action, and then the dedication at the end is your view of what you did. So it's like the rejoicing part. And so it makes sure that the action becomes then fully a completely positive action. So if you have the intention at the beginning for a positive one, and then you have positive action, and you have a positive object, and then you have a rejoicing, you have a complete karma. And if you don't have good intention, but then you have a good object, and you have good action, and you have a good dedication, you've increased the possibility of your karma having positive results. So that's where it comes from, I believe, why, you know, so we have a full, you know, as much as we can. Mm-hmm. And same, all the way through, all the parts, we want to get as many of the parts as we can to create the positive results. Does that help?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
With the Vajrasattva mantra, the 100-syllable mantra, I guess, would you have any practical advice on, I know it's used, you know, in different contexts to different traditions or whatever, but would you yourself have any advice on, the memorization of it, or, how do you use it yourself, or do you use the 100-syllable mantra?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think memorization is listening to recordings. Okay. So you know how to say it.
Yeah.
Okay. One technique for memorizing that I have heard of is that you pair parts with places. So like if you do a traveling, like if I did my walk from the Gompa up to my cabin, you know, and I paired each a line with each where I was going, because I'm really familiar with my commute, so that's a technique for memorization. And then later, once you get the pronunciation down and you have it memorized, it can be really helpful for concentrating, for saying it. So I do all the parts of the practice while I'm saying my 21 100-syllable mantras. So at the beginning I'll do, you know, visualization of Vajrasattva, and then I'll do the regrets, and then I'll do, you know, the reliance, if I remember, and then I'll do the remedies, the different kinds of, you know, that, and then, yeah, so while I'm saying the mantra, I'm doing all those visualizations and adding in those other things, and then it keeps me focused on the practice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mantras need to be verbalized or externally, or can it be recited in your head?
Either one. It's a little easier to say it, at least, there's some benefit to, they say, to being able to hear it at the level of where you can hear it, but not necessarily everybody else, because then you're actually manifesting the speech. Mm-hmm. If it's just mental recitation, that's different. Mm-hmm. But mental recitation can increase concentration as well. So it depends, you know, what you're trying to do, what your benefits are. And mental recitation, I think, is more difficult than verbal recitation, I think. That's an impression. Yes, yeah.